What's up? It's Delaney, and I'd love to invite you to become an honorary co-host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Do you want to pick episode topics and guests? Done. Want to surprise your loved ones with shout-outs on the show for a birthday, project launch, a much-needed divorce? Whatever you're up to, would love to be a part of the celebration. Get your favorite and least favorite quotes featured on the podcast, submit questions for our special guests, and find lots more new features and surprises at patreon.com/selfhelpless. You'll also get added to our Patreon Insider email list to easily redeem rewards via a quick email reply. Because we know hanging out on Patreon isn't everyone's thing. You can also opt out of emails if you prefer to be a silent supporter of the show. And don't worry, we do not Scrooge McDuck these contributions. 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses that make this weekly podcast possible and available to all. Learn more at patreon.com/selfhelpless or simply click the link in this episode's description. Thank you for helping me fill the void of being the last standing host of the Self-Helpless podcast. Thank you so much.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm no good at taking good advice, and I'm self-careless, so don't tell me twice that lately I've been so stuck in my head that I forget just about everything my therapist said. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe I'm self-helpless. Maybe we are all self-helpless.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Self-Helpless podcast. I'm Delaney Fisher, and we have such a fun guest today. Jessica Frew is here, and she is one of the hosts of Husband in Law, which is a podcast that she does with her current husband and her ex-husband. And today, Jessica really shares about her backstory and basically how they all got to this point of this friendship and, you know, they co-parent together and all of this. But over a decade ago, Jessica and her ex went through a divorce, and it was after this several years together and this experience of discovery that he is gay. And they tried to work through that in their marriage. They ended up having a child together. There was infidelity involved. So Jessica opens up about her experience kind of healing from betrayal. And we just cover so much in this episode, everything from the loss of identity and having to build new relationships with the same people and what kind of grief and healing has looked like for all of them. And yeah, kind of, you know, where they are now, the things that help them get through this very complex situation. And she also mentions, you know, the role that religion has played in their life and this dynamic as well. So there's a lot in this episode, and whether you are healing from your own betrayal, whether it's something similar to what Jessica went through or not, you're experiencing, you know, separation, you're going through a divorce, you're trying to figure out how you're going to co-parent your child, there's just, they've been sharing a lot of great advice and tips for people out there of what's just helped them navigate all of this. And I'm hoping this episode is really helpful for you as well. Before we get into it, I just want to let you know that I have an email list. It's called the D-List. It's, and I like to just share a lot of free stuff on there. I like to share announcements when I know about cool media opportunities or gigs. I share private podcast episodes about unique career paths where I have interviews with people doing really cool stuff. And I like to just share resources, whether it's a resume template, podcast tips, just, you know, things about minimalism, whatever. It's just kind of a one-stop shop for things that I find helpful that I hope help you as well. And the feedback I'm hearing, it's a very helpful list to sign up for if you are a multi-hyphenate. You like a lot of different things. Maybe you have different streams of revenue. Maybe you have, you know, a job and a business. Basically, if you're navigating how to tend to all of your interests in a cohesive way that doesn't drive you absolutely insane. So you can find that at DelaneyFisher.com. Again, it's totally free. You can also just click the link in this episode's description and it'll take you right there. All right, everybody, enjoy this conversation with Jessica. Jessica, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yes, I have a bazillion questions for you. So let's just get right into the good stuff, shall we? Could you just share with everybody a little bit about your backstory and we'll take it from there?
Yeah. I'll give you the quick version and then you can ask away and we'll dive in.
Awesome.
So people usually like me to start with my ex-husband. I met my ex-husband when I was 20. We got married very quickly and we were married for 7 years. About 6 months into our relationship, I found a bunch of pornography on our computer, which didn't really surprise me. But the surprising part was it was all men. And I was like, oh, okay, I wasn't expecting that. And while I know some straight men look at gay porn and all of that, I knew in my heart that my ex-husband was gay. And he couldn't at that time vocalize that. And it was a couple of years later when he was in therapy counseling for some other things that the counselor was like, okay, well, these things are an issue, but also until you accept the fact you're gay, then you won't be able to work through them. And so at that point, he was able to tell me, like, come out to me of, I am gay, but I don't want to leave our relationship. We were raised in a very conservative Christian religion, and that just wasn't on his radar. It wasn't a possibility. It wasn't an option. And we were both really happy together. We had tons of fun together. We had a good sex life. People always ask me that. Like, we had all the things in place. And so we continued forward. We had a daughter a few years later. And then just before our 7-year wedding anniversary, he ended up having an affair with a man. And it really changed the dynamic of our relationship and really opened up a space where he realized and I accepted that he needed to go be his authentic self. And so at that point, we decided to get divorced. And in that divorce, we really created what we hoped were for divorce. We had only seen one version of divorce, and it was full of a lot of animosity and bitterness and anger, and we really didn't want that. My one goal in moving forward in divorce was so that our daughter wouldn't have to worry about having her parents in the same room at whatever life events she wanted us to be there supporting her in, that the focus could be on her in those big moments and she didn't have to worry about, like, oh my gosh, what's going on with mom and dad? Yeah. And so we really set ourselves up to create a relationship, a divorce that looked different than most. And to this day, we are like 12 years post-divorce, which just blows my mind. We have a great relationship together. We do holidays together. We like, to the extent that Steve's birthday is oftentimes at my house with my family and like things like that. He gets along with my current husband, who I've been married to for 10 years. I have two stepkids. And we're just this unique little family that really works for us. Our daughter's 14 now, which also is just crazy. And so that is like the very condensed version of my story and where we're at now. We host a podcast together, my husband, ex-husband and I, and really just have created this relationship where we can come together to support one another and to support our daughter. And he has a new partner that has been around for a couple of years who I absolutely love and adore as well. He's an amazing individual. And that is the short of it. Like, that is the very condensed version of my story. So I'm like, where would you like to dive in?
Oh my God. I don't even know where to start. First of all, thank you for being so open about this. Thank you for having a podcast about all this. I'd imagine you are helping so many people in all kinds of different relationship dynamics. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you got married at 20 and then 6 months later, you found the pornography, and from there you knew that your husband at the time is gay, right?
Yeah. So,
but you were married for six more years after that.
6.5 years after that. Yep.
Okay. So I have to know, like, what was going through your head where you're like, okay, I know this about him, but I imagine obviously you love him. You're in love with him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to leave. I mean, how do you navigate that feeling like, I want to be with this person, but is there a part of you that feels unwanted? Or, I mean, can you just share what was going on in your mind
Yeah,
for
for
that time?
sure. It was interesting because we were pretty isolated at that time. We were living across the country away from family for the summer. We were still in college. And so in this moment, I really had Steve to lean on, my ex-husband to lean on. And he came home from work that day because I just found it on the computer. I wasn't looking. It just back then, like pop-ups would pop up all the time and it just popped up. And I was like, oh my gosh. And in that thinking, even before I came home from work, like, what do I do with this? Does this change anything for me? And kind of trying to process through a lot of information all at once. And he came home and he knew instantly what had happened. He could tell I wasn't okay. And he wasn't dumb. And he was so worried. And he always told me this. He's like, my greatest fear was first and foremost telling my wife about my pornography use, which he had already told me before we got married. But then secondly, like what type of pornography? He had never disclosed that to anybody. And he's so we talked at that point, and I knew he was just carrying so much shame and guilt around it. And for him at this point, it was still like, you know, that Christian idea of you can pray the gay away, you can do better, you can lean into this, you can change who you are. And I'm thinking, there's no way in heck you can do that. Like, that's not something you do. This is who you are. You're innately born this way. But learning how to live and understand that within this context was new for both of us. Like, it was just something we had never heard about or thought about, or I like it never crossed my mind that my future partner would be gay. And so,
Not usually on the
yeah,
checklist
like,
before you get married of what you're
no,
looking for.
yeah. And so I'm just going through and I'm like, this doesn't change who Steve is to me. This doesn't change our relationship really in any way. Like I said, we were really happy together. We had fun. Like he met so many of the things that I wanted and looked for in a partner. And so it really just was like, okay, I need to stay in tune with myself at this point as we navigate moving forward to feel what does feel right for me. And at that point, it felt very right for me to stay. Like I didn't have any reason to leave. I also, in my mind, like I know other people are like, what? But for me, it felt right. And that's partially why we share our story is because we truly believe that there's a time and a season for everybody. Like you get to decide what is right and wrong for you in your relationship. Nobody else gets to have that decision. And so for us, it was right to stay. And I really felt like Steve and I were connected for some reason, that there was some reason we were together. And I was willing to explore that further. I knew Steve wasn't ready to come out. I knew he needed to know he was loved and accepted for who he was. And I was in a place to kind of provide that for him while showing love for myself. I very much stayed grounded to that first. Like I was like, this isn't about me. I know he's not gay because of me. I never made it about me, except that it hurts sometimes to know there were things I couldn't fulfill for him. There were situations that were outside of the boundaries of our relationship that he was honest with me about that definitely hurt. But like I knew I was okay to process through those. Just, yeah.
I have not heard a story like this before of just, both parties like, okay, yeah, we know this is going on. Let's try to make this work.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So how when did Steve know that he was gay? Like, I mean, I know it took him a while to really tell, people and stuff, but did he know from a young age?
Yes. Like he's like, I knew this about myself, but I couldn't, he could never accept it about himself until it was like a couple years into our marriage when he was in that counseling meeting with that counselor. He's like, I could never let myself say the words, I am gay. Like I could never let that sink in or drop into my reality. And so it took a long time for him to just embrace that, even though, like, from a young age, he knew he was attracted to men and not women, and dating girls in high school. He's like, I never made out with anybody. I hardly kissed anybody. Like, it just, I enjoyed hanging out with them. I loved being with girls. Like, they were fun. But there wasn't, like, this desire to connect with them. He said, until he met me, like, he was on some level connected to me. We had a great time. I was the first girl that he, like, ever made out with. Obviously, I was the first one he had sex with.
Yeah.
And so he didn't even explore that at all until we were married. And he's like, I think, and we always go back to this, like, the reason it did work for us on that level was just because we are emotionally connected to each other. Like, Steve shared things with me he had never felt so safe sharing with anybody else. And so there was, like, this emotional connection that allowed him and us to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
But I think for him, like, it just wasn't something he could accept about himself until later on and really own. And even at the point of getting divorced, he was still afraid to have that out there. And when I say that, like, we separated, and within a few weeks, he was living with the man he had the affair with. And so he was very much, like, leaning into it, but also still so afraid to say, like, to welcome people into his lived reality, to who he really was.
Wow. Okay. So you mentioned that you had a great sex life. That was definitely one of my questions. You said you get that a lot, but really, I mean, how is that possible? It seems like there would be such a huge barrier there to have a fulfilling sex life in that situation.
Yeah. It's always funny because I say this, like, we had a good sex life, and a good sex life is relative to everybody. Like, there's no right or wrong way to have a good sex life. Yeah. It's all personal. It's all different for every relationship. So I preface this with that.
Yes.
And honestly, I believe now, if you ask Steve, and I mean, we've kind of touched on this a few times in our podcast. I mean, we've talked about our sex life, but, like, touched on how he feels about it now. Yeah. I don't know that he would view it as fulfilling now as he did then. So then it was all either of us knew. We had sex, like, more than most of our other married friends, and we enjoyed it and it was fun. But, like, I don't know that it was as fulfilling as what he has now. Mm-hmm. And I think partially why he doesn't explicitly say that or broach that is because he doesn't want to hurt my feelings. And I'm like, it's okay, Steve. Like, I'm totally fine with understanding. I am now married to a straight man who enjoys all of the parts of my body on a level that you did not. So
I didn't have, like, that one thing that you're really into. It's okay. I get it.
And again, sexuality is so much more than that. Like, I know that it goes beyond just sex in the bedroom. Like, his the fact he is gay, like, is more than just that one part of him. But because we were connected emotionally, it allowed us to connect together for a long time. Now, that being said, once he had the affair with this man, that was, like, the thing that really, the one thing that shifted is he was no longer attracted to me. And partially, I think, because he felt so much shame and guilt around what he had just done, because he said, he's like, I thought that if I did this, it would, like, get it out of my system. I would have sex with this man, and I would feel gross, and it would feel wrong, and it would feel horrible. And he's like, it did in the fact that it hurt you and hurt me. And he's like, you are the one person I don't want to hurt, and who's been by me, and who I love so deeply, and who this directly impacts. And he's like, so I felt bad in that sense, but it felt like the most right thing I've ever done, being with this individual. And it shut off something in him and how he was attracted to me. And I thought, I was like, it's okay. Like, we can figure that out. We can get it back. We can make it work. And maybe I don't even need that in my relationship. And I was like, no, I do need that. I think most of us need that. Like, it's such an important part of our relationships. And so at that point, we really had to tackle with or wrestle with the idea of, like, what do we do from here? What do we really want? And it was a mess trying to make it work and push forward after that point. And it just was like, we need to accept that we can still have a good relationship. We can still be a part of each other's lives without being married. Like, let's figure out how this looks and create something new there. We've already created a relationship, a marriage that didn't fit the norm. Like, we can do this again in divorce. And that's kind of what we held on to in that time.
How did you find out about the affair?
Yeah. We had just moved to a new city, and we had been in Colorado, and we had just moved to Oklahoma. And Steve had started going, like, we both went to the gym on a regular basis for our mental health, and like it was a very important thing to us as we were navigating this whole little mess we were in. And Steve started going to the gym, and we realized that the gym he was going to was like the gay gym in town. And not that it was all gays, but
Oh,
there was definitely,
on
yes, on accident, like he
accident?
realized this, and he's like, Jess, there's a guy that approached me at the gym. I'm super attracted to him. I'm gonna go to this other gym. And like, so things like that had kind of been coming up. There was more that happened before that, but like, he's like, I am scared. Like, this is the closest I've ever thought about acting on this and all these things. And I was like, okay, you do what you need to do, and protecting yourself or whatever feels right. And I left town to go home for a family reunion. And I came back. When I came back, my Penny and I, when I, our daughter and I came back, I remember seeing Steve at the airport. He's picking us up, you know, like you do. And we get off the plane, we go through security, and Penny like sees him and takes off running to him. And she's like almost two. So she's just tiny and it's so cute. And she throws her arms around him. And I just remember standing there like watching this. And it still gets me emotional because I can see it so clearly. And just knowing something had shifted in our relationship, like knowing something was wrong, knowing that things were different. And nothing was different about Steve. He looked the same. He didn't look sad. He like nothing, but there was just this deep knowing in myself. And I often share that because I think we ignore those things and we let them slide because, you know, I asked Steve later that night after Penny's in bed and we'd done all the things and had like some family time. I was like, hey, is everything okay? Like, did something happen? And he's like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. And I was like, okay, but I knew. Like so deep in me. And I think, you know, we wait for that proof, or we, you know, people tell us everything's fine and we just take it like, okay, I guess I'm supposed to trust them. I can trust them more than me. They know. And about a week later, I was like just going nuts. Like I can't shut down my intuition. And I'm like up at night, he falls asleep and I'm up at night crying. I'm like, can't. My brain's spinning and I'm up until like 2 in the morning. I'm watching Friends. I remember I watched Friends a lot to try and like get my brain to shut down and fall asleep and just like wrestling with this. Like, what do I do? And so I went to find the proof. I went, he left his phone one day. I'm like, I know where I can find the answers to this. I pulled up his email. There was like a person who was kind of like his support person back in Colorado that there was an email to. I opened it up. And I start to read, and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't find out this way. I don't want this to be who we are. Like, we've always tried to respect each other in this area. And while some people that's normal, it's fine, like, whatever. But this was something we had kind of set up. Like, Steve was in support groups. I wanted that to be private. I wanted that to be his connection where he felt safe sharing things with somebody. And I was like, I have to respect this. And that night, we're laying in bed, and I said, Steve, I need to tell you something. I got on your phone today. I opened up your email. I went to this email. I read a couple lines. I did not read anything. I don't know if there is anything in there I need to know, like whatever. I just need you to know that's what I did. And at that point, he like flips on the light and he's like, Jessica, you do not need to be sorry for this. He's like, I have to be honest with you. And he said, you know, this is what happened. I had an affair while you were gone, and this is how long we were together. I've cut contact with him. This isn't what I want, and all of these things. And also at the same time, he's like, I'll tell you anything you want to know. And I'm like, I don't want details. Like, I do not. I'm really glad I knew that in that moment. I don't want details. I do need to know like a little timeline and like the extent of things. Like, I knew they'd had sex. I knew that Steve didn't drink. I knew he'd been drinking, like things like that. That
Oh,
I was like,
interesting.
okay, I need to kind of know where you're at. And at that point, we just kind of tried to decide what we do from there. We were a mess.
Oh my gosh. I thank you for talking about intuition so much because I think we can all I think that resonates with everybody tuning in. We knew something was up.
there wasn't maybe the clear evidence quite yet, but you just felt it. I talked about an experience recently where for about 9 months, I had the same recurring dream over and over again. And I was like, what is going on with this? But it's like my body knew something that I didn't know quite yet. And it was trying to tell me and like hit me over the head with the information. And then as soon as I found out what had been going on, the dream stopped, of course. But it really is. And it's interesting that, you know, in the beginning of your relationship, your intuition was telling you to stay. And then this situation, it was telling you, okay, something is different. Do you feel like the first kind of, you know, I'm going to stay in this was that, do you feel like because you were about to have your daughter together? Do you feel like, what kept me here? What's,
yeah, you know? It's interesting because I, like, yes, I think it was somewhat about Penny. Like, I'm so grateful Steve and I both have her, partially because I'm glad it connects us. Like, Steve and I truly believe that part of my purpose here in this life was to be a safe haven for Steve specifically, to be able to provide a space for him to come out. He dealt with suicidal ideation for years after we divorced. And I slept with my phone on even into my second marriage. I would tell him, like, my phone is on. You can call any time. Like, please call me. And he did it a few times, called me in the middle of the night. And it's like, I'm ready to be done. And I remember just talking him through that process. And so I really believe that Steve and I were connected for a reason that was beyond just Penny. I think Penny gives Steve a lot of purpose. Both of us, but especially where he's at now, like, he always wanted to have a kid. He was the one that really pushed like timing for that and all of those things. And so I think it was partially Penny. I believe it was for Steve, for both of us. And I learned so much about myself and realized my strengths and weaknesses in this process. And I also believe that it was so that we can help and support other people. Like, there are so many people who maybe don't go through our exact situation, but there's a lot of them who do, who just need to know there's hope on the other side of this, that there is hope of being okay, that it's, you're not ruining your family, you're not ruining your kids. You can have a life that feels beautiful and good to you still. And so I think that there was more to it than that. I mean, I believe in plans. I believe that we all have a purpose. And so for me, seeing that and understanding that has really supported us through all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. How did you balance though, like, feelings of betrayal that I'm sure came up with wanting to be supportive of Steve and like his journey of coming out and like owning who he is, but also taking care of your heart that was just broken, you know?
I always tell people think like that our relationship looked like it does now, right from the beginning. And to be clear, like, Steve and I don't see each other that often, but when we meet each other, like, it's an, you know, instant friends, instant easy, somebody you can talk to when you need it, and just fun. Yeah. But when we first got divorced and after the betrayal, like, I knew I had to take care of myself first. Like, that was my obligation, for lack of a better word, to myself and to my daughter. Like, I had to take care of me so that I could continue to take care of her. And so really focusing on that, like, I was allowed to feel big feelings and hold those. And also, I didn't have to share them with Steve. I didn't have to, because he took that on personally and I knew that. And so really navigating how I took care of my own emotions, I knew supported Steve. And sometimes he heard them. Sometimes I was loud about it. But really coming back to the fact that also I know this wasn't intentionally to hurt me. I knew he didn't do this because of me. And I think that is most of the time the instances in betrayal, whether your husband's gay or not, or your partner is gay or not, is it's really not usually about you, but it's an unmet need in them. And you're not capable of meeting that need. And that's okay. And also the betrayal's not okay. So there's like this weird thing that happens. But I really latched onto that. I get to take care of myself first. I get to take care of my daughter. And then it allows things to fall into place with Steve in a way that felt good and that worked for us. We took a lot of space. There was a lot of time in very like set custody arrangements of like, we need to respect this, to respect each other's time now, to rebuild trust in our relationship, and to be clear about that. And we took time to not share all of the things emotionally. There were times I'd be like, I would love to support you with this right now. I can't hear it. Like, this is not okay for me to hear. And really just being vocal about that and seeming like, okay, like I can step back, and vice versa of like, there are things we're not ready to share with each other and it's okay. So I think just really, really tapping into that, again, intuition of what does feel okay right now, what does not, how do I move forward in a way that feels right for me, and allowing there to be this idea of things don't have to look right now how I want them to look in a couple of years. So I want to be friends with Steve and support him, and also I'm not emotionally okay. And so I can take space and things and realize that down the road, things might be able to shift and look different. We might be able to spend more time together. We might be able to, you know, be together with our partners and enjoy time together. But maybe right now that feels hard, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just, it's so nuanced. It's not black and white. It's like all these things are existing at the same exact moment. Do you feel like there would be any, what differences, if any, in your relationship that you all have together now, or even the process of healing from this, what do you think would have been different if he had had an affair with a woman, if anything?
I get asked this on a regular basis, and so does Matt, my current husband, because they're like, would you be as loving and accepting of Jessica's relationship with Steve if he was still with women, or if he was, you know, would that be a bigger threat because our jealousy? And Matt and I have both answered this kind of the same. First of all, we have no idea. Like, who knows?
It's all speculation.
And also, all speculation. And also, I choose to believe that we would be able to navigate this very similarly. Like, again, betrayal isn't necessarily about the individual who's betrayed. And when we can detach from that, when we can see that differently, we can see like the good that's there. Steve is an amazing dad. Steve shows up for me in lots of ways and also can't show up for me in certain ways. And so when I can recognize the ways he can show up for me and the things that he does do, then it makes it a lot easier to be in partnership with him and community. And so I don't know. I did get to a point where because initially I said, if you are ever with another woman, I will be so pissed. Like, I did carry that. So there's that.
Right.
And also now I'm like, I do not care at all who you are with. Like, I could care less. I just want to know that you are doing what's right for you and that you are showing up for yourself first and then for our daughter in a way that feels good and genuine to you and your intuition.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And so, I mean, obviously I thought it would make a difference in that moment, that it would change how I felt. I don't know that it would, but again, it's all speculation. Who knows? I do know the thoughts and feelings of betrayal are very similar no matter what you go on. And people get really mad at me when I use betrayal in the sense that Steve betrayed me in our relationship. And I'm like, okay, first of all, there was infidelity. He did things outside of the boundaries that we had set for our marriage and our relationship. And also, by him not being true to himself, he's betraying himself and therefore me. And he will own that. Like, people will be like, dude, Jessica just said you betrayed her. And he's like, I did. Yeah. He's like, it's okay. She's using that word. It's a word we have such negative connotations to, but we betray ourselves all the time. And when we recognize that and learn from it, we get to show up better for ourselves and the people in our lives. And so betrayal comes in all forms. And when we are betraying ourselves, we are betraying the people closest to us. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to accept that. We don't have to beat ourselves up for it, though. It's just reality. And we get to learn and do better and figure out what works for us in the future.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that you mentioned, you know, betrayal is often not about the person who is being betrayed. You know, it is that need that other person is looking to fulfill. And I think for a lot of people, that initial reaction is to go inward of like,
what could I have done differently? What's wrong with me? Why doesn't this person want me? And I'm so glad that you said, really, it's about them. And how can you kind of, you know, take that kind of pressure focus off of yourself? So how old was your daughter Penny when you guys divorced?
She just turned 2 when our divorce was official. We got married fast. We got divorced fast. He had the affair like Labor Day, and we were divorced by end of the year. Okay. And so like we worked through a lot quickly, and she was 2. So she, I mean, this is really all she's ever known. Yeah. She does randomly have a couple memories from when we were married, and it's so crazy to me that she does. But so yeah, this is her lived reality.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, she was just, very, very young. So there probably didn't really need to be like a big conversation of what was going on of, you know, why you were separating or anything like that, or this is what's going on with dad. And, you know, it's just always been like this kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The conversations came later because people are always like, when is the right time to tell your kids these things and like all this? And I'm like, listen, the right time is when you're in it. And to be honest, on an age-appropriate, sensitive level, like they don't need to know all the dirty details of what's going on. And also they know, even at young age, that something has shifted. And so for Penny, as soon as she started asking questions about Steve's sexuality or noticing, you know, him with men, holding hands, giving a kiss goodbye, we opened up that door of, you know, yes, your dad is gay. Some people, and Steve started it as just a basic conversation. I think she was 3 at the time. And, you know, like some people love girls, like some boys love girls, some girls love boys, and some boys love boys, and some girls love girls. And it's okay. Like this is just how it is. And it took her a little bit to kind of understand that or grasp that, because we're only shown one thing from such a young age that it's like, you need some time to process through that. And then she's been fine. Like she's totally good with all that. And also the idea of Steve and I not being together actually hit after I remarried. So she was like 3, 3 and a half when we got married. I got married very quickly. Shocking.
You waste no time. I love it.
I processed through things.
What I want. Let's go.
Yeah. She would then. That transition was hard for her, and she would say, you know, I just want you and daddy to be back together and those types of things. So that processing actually happened after I was remarried, that kind of came up for her. And I think that's just a natural thing. And often we make it again about us of like, oh, I'm such a bad parent. I should have worked harder to make things work with her father. I should have whatever. We should all over ourselves instead of just recognizing our kids get to grieve things they thought they would have too, even if it wasn't their reality any time in their life. Like still, like they know, oh, moms and dads are usually together, or they have like a perceived image of what life will be. And so we get to allow them that space and give them that safety to feel that and vocalize that. And I, you know, be like, yeah, Penny, that is hard. That would have been great and ideal. And you get to feel that. And also it's not the reality. We can figure out ways to make this work, and it will feel better with time. And as we're intentional in our relationships with each other, it'll feel better and all of that. So,
right. No, I think, that's such great advice of just, you know, when the kids start asking the questions, you respond to them at the time that they're noticing things or they're questioning things and all of that. That doesn't have to be like, okay, let's round up everybody in our life to have this official meeting with our 2-year-old daughter about X, Y, and Z. I like that. It's just kind of, okay, we're going with the flow. We're explaining things as they're unfolding. Would you mind sharing a little bit about the role that the church played in all of this, or like the upbringing that you both had? Were you still involved in the church when the divorce happened? I would, anything that you want to share about that. Were they supportive? Were they not? Anything.
Like all the things. So we were raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Most people know that as Mormon or LDS. It's interesting to look back on things now. Steve is very much, and to this day, he is a very black and white thinker. Like everything is either black or white. There is no gray. And I think this is like why it was so hard for him specifically to love and accept himself of where he was at. And also we were raised to like, this is the way forward. This is the path. You get married to, you graduate, you go to college, you serve an LDS mission, you get married, like, you have kids. Like, this was the path. This was the way to be saved or to eternal salvation. And we did all those things. We checked all the boxes. And then it's like, but wait, like, this isn't feeling good to us. This isn't right. And like I said, Steve was very much, it's either all true or it's all not true. And he can't live in that middle. And so once he came out, I mean, he came to church for a little bit after we got divorced. And he's like, I can't, for my mental health, I have to be done. And I'm like, I think that's a good idea. Like, and the church, it's a cultural thing and also church doctrine on some level. Like, it's evolved and changed a little bit. But yeah, gays do not have the same rights and privileges as a heteronormative relationship, or like, you know, like, they, queer individuals don't have the same rights and privileges within the LDS church, which is really hard for me to navigate and understand and think about, and has influenced where I am currently at with the church. But for Steve, it was just like, mental health wise, you can't stay in this. Like, there's no living this anymore. And so he did leave shortly after we got divorced, which, totally good, right move for him, like, beautiful. For me, it has been like a long process of understanding what I believe and how that shifted and how that plays out in raising my daughter. Like, I firmly still, when we got divorced, thought I would raise my daughter in our church. And at this point, I don't feel like that's a safe place for her to be in our religion. Like, how can you live somewhere, grow up somewhere where your dad isn't welcome in all of the ways, in every single way? Like, he might be welcome, but like, his relationship with his partner would be frowned upon and wouldn't be considered okay. And I'm like, I can't raise my daughter in that. I can, however, there are parts of the gospel, not necessarily my church, that I believe in. Like, I do believe there's a God. I do believe in Jesus Christ. Like, there are things like that I believe in, that bring me comfort and peace. And I'm like, you get to decide whether, my daughter gets to decide whether she believes in that or not. And I'm supportive and do not care what her life looks like or what she believes, as long as she does what's right for her and feels good in that. But that's taken time to, like, release this, like, this is the way to salvation or to be saved or to be like Christ or to come unto God. Like, I don't believe there's one right way to do that in anybody's life, and understanding how that looks for her and accepting that. I go to church. I really have a hard time with a lot of things within the LDS church that do not resonate with me at this point. And also, I love my congregation. I love that I get to go with my husband, because Matt is more in it than I am and in line with that. And that's fine. And it works for him. But more and more, it's like, there's just so much that I cannot live into. And I think it's had to be a gradual thing for me. I think that's, I mean, as much as I jump and act on things that I know are right for me, I also sometimes need, like, I feel like we all need time to process through things on a level that doesn't overwhelm us, of like, okay, I can let go of this one thing here and this other thing here. And then when I'm ready, I can let go of this next big thing. And I think that's kind of been the process for me in my religion and my beliefs.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. Seriously, I know it's a really big topic, and I think it's very courageous to talk about that, the shifts in beliefs and everything. Has Steve ever mentioned that being raised in the church, did he feel like that played a big role in him not wanting to kind of own that part of himself? Does he feel like if he had a different upbringing that maybe he would have explored that or not even married a woman at some point? Like, has he ever talked about that, what that, you know, role was like for him?
I mean, it very much led him to be married to a woman when he probably wouldn't have, if he had been raised in a family that, you know, that was accepted and talked about. And it was actually something he had seen, like, even 15 years ago, you just didn't see it as much when we were growing up. I mean, like 20, 30 years ago when we were growing up, you just didn't see as many gay individuals. And it was still, you know, I mean, like, Ellen came out when we were growing up, and that was like this huge big deal and changed her, you know, career and all of this stuff. And at the time, it was not good, and then it got better. And so, like, he didn't see that. He saw that. And so it was like this scary, not okay thing, even outside of our religion. And so I think that that definitely impacted it. Now, what I will say, and that Steve has said over and over again, is he's like, I wouldn't change the path I was on. Like, this gave me so many things in my life that I wouldn't have had I not gone through this process. And so he can just live in that this was his path, and it has given him the things he really wanted. I mean, having a kid, he's like, I don't know that I would have gotten there in the way that I did. And he's like, and people be like, oh, you're gay ex-husband used you to get a kid. And then that, like, I hear that all the time. And I'm like, that wasn't the case. Like, people who think that, I'm just like, you guys, you've got your own issues, like, that you're working through, own blocks of how the world's supposed to be. But that wasn't Steve's intention. It wasn't malicious. And he accepts that, you know, this was his journey. This is the way his life went. He lived it. He embraced it. And he pivoted when he needed to. And just, I think, accepts that, you know, this is where he is and what he did, and that it's okay, that this was his process.
How are you all dealing with, like, any criticisms and stuff that you're getting? You kind of mentioned, you know, people kind of say this or that, you know, I know as a podcaster myself, it's not always fun. How do you personally handle those things?
You know, I just try to stay out of the shit. I try to stay out of the mud with them. People are always projecting their own lived experiences and from what they can understand and comprehend. Yeah. And so as we put this out here, I always just try to go back to the fact that we are connecting and finding the individuals who need us in this process. And the people who throw the shit are actually pushing that along. Like, they're the ones that are getting us seen on Instagram, and they get into these huge fights in my comments, and I just am like, whatever. Like,
thanks for helping the algorithm.
Yeah, thanks for making sure the people who need me find me. And that's kind of the approach. Now, the things that I find when they hit that I'm like, ooh, that one kind of stung. And also, I really try to stay out of my comments when I hit a certain level of a real, like, we've got some that have millions of views on them. And when they start hitting that level, I know to kind of check out and protect my peace, because yes, that's when people get vicious.
Yes.
And I tell Steve, I'm like, do not go in my comments ever. And we both get bashed. It comes from all sides. My husband gets bashed. Like, all of us get bashed. We all get it. Like, the church, the gays, like, it's all in there. Everybody's coming from a different direction. And so we all stay out of it. Like, I'm like, this isn't a healthy place for any of us to be. And in that, it's like, okay. And also, the people are finding, like, flooding my DMs of, thank you, I needed to hear this. Thank you. I didn't think I could come out to my partner and that there could be a way that we could have a healthy relationship and all of those things. So I think coming back to that why is really important. Oh, and I was saying, there are comments that hit that I'm like, that one stings. And it's because it's something that I've had to tackle, a truth that I've had to rethink for myself, or something that I've had to check to make sure my intentions were right in sharing this. Like, yeah, am I sharing this just to, like, for a certain response, or am I sharing this because I genuinely want to help other people? Mm-hmm. And when I can come back to the fact that, yes, this is done genuinely to help other people feel seen and supported, then I'm like, okay, I can let this go. But that's good. Like, it's good to have my intentions checked and to feel this. But also, most of it, it's just like, we just stay out of it, and people are going to project and say the things they need to say. And there have been a couple times I've turned off comments, only twice in the recent little bit, that I'm like, you know what? I don't want to carry this anymore. Like, this is too much. And so with those ones, I've turned them off when it's like, they're at 6 million views and I'm like, this is done. it's ran its course.
And goodbye. Thank you. No, it's there's a big theme here that's just like, everything's like the gray area, right? It's like all of it mixed.
It's all gray. Lines.
And I resonate with everything that you said of, like, you know, the messages of thank you so much, and also like, oh, that message stung a little, and this, you know, all that. And I have found that to be true for myself. If somebody says something that does not resonate with me, like, they could be like, oh, Delaney's 5'2" or whatever. I'm like, well, I'm actually 5'8", so that doesn't bother, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't bother me. That's just an example, because it's just, it's not factual, right? So it rolls off the back, those things that I'm like, that's not even the truth. But if somebody says something else, or I'm like, oh, I feel like there's some unresolved stuff around whatever they just said, I'm a little insecure about that. I got to work on that. I actually take that, like, thank you so much for that note, because I might take this to my therapist next time, or I might actually add something on my website that explains this a little bit further, because it's obviously hit me for some reason. So I actually have used that as a tool of like, oh, I can do something with this. And that's how I kind of process some of those things. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. How did you meet your current husband? And yeah, what's everybody's relationship like? You kind of mentioned that he's still pretty involved in the church, but also, you know, you've obviously said where you're at. What's going on here? What's the current dynamic?
So Matt and I and Steve actually all moved into the same church congregation post-divorce. We were all divorced. Steve and I, and this is part of the story I haven't gone into yet, it's a whole nother thing. Steve and I dated for a hot minute after we got divorced. So like for, I mean like 5 or 6 months. And so at that time, Steve and I are dating again. Matt moves into our church congregation, and I am like in the thick of this shit, like totally in an emotional fog. And so I didn't even notice this guy here. Normally I would have, but it's like, no, I'm focused on my thing. But he and Steve met. They started talking at church and just kind of gained like a general friendship. They weren't like tight or anything. And then one of their friends from church started inviting them to go mountain biking. So they would all go mountain biking together. And Matt at the time was dating another girl named Jessica. Steve's dating this girl named Jessica. And they didn't like really talk about things. Matt was just like, whatever, something's going on. I know they share a kid. They're dating, like, I don't know what's going on, but you know, as guys do, like they don't get into it.
Yeah.
And one night, as they're leaving to go mountain biking, they left from my apartment complex. And so I like went out to say goodbye to all of them with Penny and O. And Steve's like, hey, this is Matt. He goes to church with us. And I was like, oh, hey, Matt. And I knew like in that moment, and I always make fun of people for this and I can't anymore, that I was going to marry him. Like, I was like, this guy is my future partner. And like, I literally said hi to him. It's so nuts. But I knew Steve and I were ending things, like we needed to just be done. And a week later we had like the official conversation. This is over. Like, let's leave in peace. We've done everything we know. We tried. We're done. We're good.
Yeah.
And in that conversation, I told Steve, okay, I'm going to marry Matt Frew. And he like looks at me. He's like, you said hi to the man. Like, you do not know him. I'm like, I know this is crazy. And he's like, okay, like whatever. And I went after Matt at that point. Like, I added him on Facebook and like started talking to him, and we hung out a couple times. Yeah, totally slid into his DMs. And like, we talked a couple times or hung out a couple times, and he's like, listen, I'm super flattered. You're a super cute girl. And also I'm dating this other chick named Jessica, and we're far enough into it that I can't date you both out of good conscience. And I want to see where this goes. And I'm like, cool. Let me know when you break up with her. I think we'd have a really good time together. And so for 9 months after that, he dated this other girl. I dated all sorts of guys, and we would talk and like DM a ton. Like, going back and reading our chat history is so funny. And every few months I would just be like, okay, well, let me know when you break up with her. I think we'd have a lot of fun together. And then one day at church, he sat next to me, which was new. He and his kids like came and sat with Penny and I, and I was like, this is different. And then he texted me later during church, and he's like, hey, would you want to meet up at the park with the kids after church? I'm like, yeah, I would. And he's telling me how he's never going to get married. He's done dating. He's not going to date anymore and all of this stuff. And I'm like, okay, buddy. And he broke up with his girlfriend the next day. And the next night he was at my house hanging out, and we got married 8 weeks later.
8 weeks? Oh my God. Wait, how long have you been married now?
10 years, 10 and a half years.
Oh my gosh. Wow. It's so funny. I had a moment like that with my husband too. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to marry this guy. And I was not looking to date anybody seriously.
Yeah.
And I definitely wasn't like thinking this is going to be my husband, but I had that weird moment that some people talk about. It is weird. Okay. You mentioned that you dated Steve a little bit after the divorce. How did that start, finish? Why? How did that lead there?
Oh, man. So I had started dating other people. He was living with the guy he had the affair with. Okay. And so we were kind of, you know, figuring this out. Like, what does this look like? What do we want? And Steve was a mess, like just a hot mess. And his partner, I am so grateful for that man. He was so patient and understanding with Steve. And just, I was so glad he was there. And Steve, one day I messaged him. I had just gone out. It was Valentine's Day. I had just gone out with this guy that I was dating. And I was like, man, I could see myself kind of falling for this guy. And he was super into me. I knew that. I messaged him right before I went to bed that night. I said, Steve, you've kind of alluded to the fact of moving to Boise because we were in different states. He was in Oklahoma. I moved back to Idaho because we had a house here and all that. So we were far apart. I said, you've alluded to the fact of moving back here. I don't know if that's 100% for Penny or if you are wanting to see if we can make things work, but I'm falling in love with somebody else. So if that's what you're wanting to explore, you need to do that now. And he called me the next morning and he's like, I want to move back. I want to try again. It's like, I feel a mess still. I need to see if I made the right decision. He's like, I've just been waiting to see if I could find a job there. And I'm like, the job isn't important. Like, if you're serious about this, like, let's go. So he quit his job. And a few hours later, a job with the same company opened up in Boise. And they called him back and they're like, hey, you can have this job in Boise if you want it. And he's like, what the heck?
That is wild.
So he moved to Boise. Like, I was like, you also need to move out of this apartment. Like, you're living with somebody else. And if you're serious, I need to know you're serious. So he moved out. And yeah, it's a whole weird story in there. But he moved out and lived in an apartment or a hotel for a week. And then I flew out there and we drove back to Idaho together and it was so weird and such a mess, like such a mess, but we did it and it was the right path for us. And I'm sure my parents were dying because they know at this point Steve's gay and he's had an affair and they're like, what are you doing?
Right. But you know what? Sometimes you just have to hit your own wall to be like, I've literally tried everything and now we can really close this chapter. Like,
we closed it at that point. Like, there was no turning back. We were like, we are done. This was good. Let's go live our life. Yeah. And we did. And we have.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I cannot, time has flown. I can't believe it. I have so many more questions, but I really want to give you a chance to, you know, leave people with things that you think are really important for them to know if they are going through something similar, whether they're amidst a transition like this, they're trying to figure out how to co-parent, you know, with their former spouse. Any advice about healing from betrayal? I mean, what are some things that you're like, people need to know this, if anything, like,
so there's this whole process of learning to trust our gut again after betrayal or during betrayal or wherever you're at in this process. And honestly, I feel like just in life, we have lost connection to our own intuition. I've been told since we were little kids that we're not hurt, we're fine, that's not a big deal, whatever. So we're taught to shut it down. So the first thing is you have to start listening to what it is you need and silencing the noise of other people's opinions, which is so hard, especially when you're going through something big, because people are like, well, you should be doing this, or you shouldn't talk to him, or you should, whatever. Like, people just start spewing their advice. I'm like, you have no idea until you're in this situation what you should or shouldn't do and what is right for you. So first of all, learning to hear your gut again and acting on it. You have to act. And as you do that, it starts healing things in ways you will never believe. Like, why did that work? How do I feel peace right now? But it's because you're taking the next right step for you, even though there's heavy feelings attached to that. So really trusting to and listening to your gut, silencing that noise. And with that, I always say stepping out of perfect partner syndrome, which is something most of us end up leaning into before the betrayal or during the betrayal, before we know about the betrayal, because we know something's off and we think we have to change us, that we're the ones that have to change or prove something. And so we start shutting down everything we need and we start showing up in the ways we think that person wants us to, or we think we're supposed to, so that they'll stay. We're trying to prove our worth. We're trying to prove all those things. And we get stuck in that for a long time, even after we get divorced or whether we separate, or even if we stay together. But we have to come out of that, because if we're not true to who we are, we will never be content or happy in the relationship or in our divorce or any of that. So it's really kind of like listening into those things of, how am I living into perfect partner syndrome? What does my gut actually tell me I want and need? And silencing that noise of other people's opinions, which is really hard, but man, it is the most freeing and empowering thing you can do.
Oh my gosh. Well, you mentioned about like trusting your gut, acting on it. The way that like you knew something was up with Steve, right? And you took an action, like, I'm just going to check the phone. And then you talked to him about it. If you hadn't done that, was there ever a conversation of like when he would have told you, if he would have told you?
That's the thing, is it's like, who knows?
Right.
And like, that was a scary conversation to have, to admit, hey, I'm, and apologize when I know something's off, of saying, I'm really sorry I did this. But it opened the door for him to be honest with me. And there are so many things that I look back on in my life and I'm like, man, trusting that one thing really got me to where I needed to be and showed me where I needed to go. And it's, and even more so in my second marriage than even the divorce process and all of that. Cause man, second marriage is a whole nother crapshoot that is just nuts. Like, that's a whole nother story. But leaning into that has changed everything in my life, in my relationships. And it's the most powerful tool you can have, but you have to act on it. That's the thing, is like, people hear it, but we don't act. And I'm like, if you, it shuts off. You stop hearing yourself if you don't take action, because why would you keep talking if nobody's paying attention on the other side of that? So you have to act and learn how to do that.
Oh my gosh. Jessica, thank you so much. I cannot believe how quickly this conversation flew by for me. I could talk to you forever. Where can people find your work, your podcasts, all that good stuff? I feel like we have to have a part two of this conversation, because I still got much I want to chat with you about. But yeah, where's the next steps people that can take with you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Hey Jessica Frew. I'm also like on TikTok and Pinterest, although not as active. If you want access to me, Instagram is the way to go. Our podcast is called Husband in Law, and we share our stories of love, marriage, divorce, coming out, remarriage, co-parenting, all of the things, starting with episode one. It's not like a typical podcast. You're going to want to go to episode one, and then you can hear Steve and I and Matt tell our stories in our own words and voices. And if you are looking for that beginning step to trust your gut after betrayal, whatever that looks like, whether it's self-betrayal or betrayal of a partner or whatever you're going through, you can pick up a free workbook that I have. It's called Trusting Your Gut After Betrayal. And you can get that at theboldlogic.com/free workbook. And that'll be like first steps to get you started on that path.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much. I love your background, by the way. I was going to say that at the beginning of the conversation, but it's incredible. I've been looking at it the whole time. Like, it just makes me so happy.
It makes me happy.
Thank you again. And yeah, we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Big thank you to Jessica for coming on the podcast and answering so many personal questions and putting her life out there in order to help other people. Go check out her podcast, Husband in Law. And then before we wrap up, just a little update and an iTunes review of the episode. So, we have had a Patreon membership for years now. And a lot of you know that, you know, we're in transition right now. I'm now hosting the podcast solo. And we've had a lot of, you know, these rewards on Patreon for a while. So we're revamping things, we're refreshing things, we're adding new things into the mix. I really would love to hear from you. Is there anything that you would love to see on Patreon? Because I would really, I would want to try my best to incorporate what you might like to see, whether it's some kind of bonus content that you would like, or, you know, sessions for something, or me hopping on and doing some stuff. I don't even know what, Q&A or some kind of trainings for things. I don't know. I am so open to your ideas, because you have really co-created all of this with us. I mean, when we first launched the Patreon, you all were submitting your ideas and we took that and we, you know, created the rewards out of them. And so now that we're, you know, in this transition and we're kind of looking at things that we haven't refreshed in a while, I would just love to hear from you. If you have an idea, selfhelplesspodcast@gmail.com. If you have been a Patreon supporter, if you want to be one, things that you want to see, 100% of proceeds go directly to operating expenses for the show. It's not like money that I pocket or anybody else. It keeps the show going. It enables us to keep it a weekly show, making it, you know, free and available to everybody. So we just really, really appreciate the support. And for my hot tip of the episode, I'm going to kind of go off of that. You know, it's a weird kind of transition time for me. It's very exciting. There's some cool stuff happening that I'm very happy about, but there's a lot of newness in my life, and that can be exciting, but also very anxiety inducing. And I'm coming off a period of time where I was just kind of very lost and didn't exactly know what was what my direction was. And now I just have a lot on my plate. It kind of shifted very quickly. I have a lot going on and I'm trying to take it minute by minute. And for me, when I'm in a time of transition or when I find myself trying to, whether I'm overanalyzing something or my perfectionistic tendencies are kicking in, and this usually happens like when I'm in a mode of trying something new or redoing something or whatever, I just like to zoom out. And maybe this is helpful if you are also in a weird transition time, or you're putting yourself out there in a new way and you maybe are a little bit nervous about it or whatever it might be. But for me, I just keep telling myself that, you know, let's take the podcast, for example. I love doing this podcast. I want to do this forever. I don't see me ever stopping this. I truly enjoy it so much. And when I find myself really zooming in on these minute details of like, what should the Patreon reward be for this week and this week? You know, when I get so zoomed in, I have to tell myself, look, let's back it up here. Let's say you're doing this podcast for decades longer. Will this thing that you are overanalyzing or trying to figure out, will it matter, you know, in 10 years? Will it kind of figure itself out pretty soon over the next several months or whatever? And that always relieves a lot of pressure on me that I don't have to figure everything out right this second. And it does help with urgency. So I like to zoom out. If you're experiencing a lot of pressure right now, or you have a lot of self-imposed deadlines or urgency, maybe just say like, look, I'm going to be figuring things out indefinitely. Like our life is a work in progress. Our career is a work in progress. Nothing is permanent. Things are, you know, the only kind of permanence is impermanence, right? Like things change and that's kind of the constant. Tell yourself to zoom out. Maybe that's helpful. Maybe it's just zooming out for 6 months or a year or 10 years or whatever. But I just felt like I wanted to share that today and just being really honest with like, I'm amidst a lot of new shit myself. And you guys are on that ride with me. And I will definitely share more about like what this past year, you know, the things that I've been through and considered and a lot of the changes that I've made. I will do that over time. But for now, I just want to let you know, if you have had a weird fucking strange year where a lot of stuff was shaken up and you are slowly putting the pieces back together in a way that makes sense for your life and just be more authentic in it, I'm right there with you. Okay, so the iTunes review of the episode is from Jace Face on a New Race, and it is 5 cookie emojis, 5-star review, and it says, I'm late to the game, but I'm here to stay. Thank you so much. I think it's so, how cool is it that you can put a podcast out there, and this show's been going on for, I think, 6.5 years now, and there's new people still discovering it. And that is so cool. But maybe that's just a helpful reminder to all the creatives out there. Sometimes you put something out there, it's not instant gratification or instant feedback from people. There's people finding this podcast almost 7 years later. And, you know, some people are going to find your stuff now and some people are going to find it down the road. And I hope you are enjoying the process, you know, no matter what, to all my creatives out there. So if you want to leave a review that gets read on the podcast, you can do so. And I'll read it on the next episode. It'll totally happen. All right, everybody. I hope you have a great week and I will talk to you soon. Thank you for tuning in to the Self-Helpless Podcast. You can find our Patreon community, merch, and other goodies at selfhelplesspodcast.com. We'd be thrilled if you left an iTunes review, shared this episode with a friend, or post about it on Instagram and tag @selfhelplesspodcast so we can repost you and say hi. Thanks, everyone.